Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Baum. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 200 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I've put together a selection of clips from interviews with people who have had a near-death experience. In this episode, I thought it would be interesting to see just how different these experiences can be. First, we hear from Nancy Rhines. This is from an interview recorded in 2020. Nancy was riding her bicycle when a large SUV ploughed right into her. Her second, more lengthy near-death experience came days later during the surgery that attempted to repair her traumatized spine.
So the landscape changed, but the first part of the landscape, I have to say, because you're in Great Britain, I love to tell people that the landscape looked a lot like Scotland, and I've never been to Scotland, but it looked like pictures that I've seen of the Highlands, and it was really cool. It was a beautiful, I first came into awareness in this beautiful meadow on a hillside overlooking some rolling mountains with fog, and it was just incredibly beautiful, like so many pictures I've seen of the Highlands. And eventually, you know, we moved through different parts of the landscape. So we walked a lot of times, we walked through forests, but the forests had different kinds of energy. So if I, for example, when I would look at trees, I would see a tree shape, and I would see all this beautiful light energy coming through the leaves. So, but it wasn't just light, it was energy. It was like sparkling. And then when I looked at the tree itself, I could see the tree, but also the energetic essence of that tree. So I'd see at the core of this tree would be this beautiful shimmer like rainbow of energy that was really the basis of the tree. And if I looked at a flower, the same type of thing, it would be encased in this halo of energy. But then I could influence the color of that flower just by my thoughts or feelings. So I played with that a little bit. It was kind of fun to change colors of flowers with just how I felt. But what I realized as we kept walking, at one point, I remember looking behind me, and then I got a little bit freaked out because when I looked behind me, I saw that everything behind me was kind of fading off into the fog. There was like a fog behind me. And I asked her about that, and she said, well, this is a place, a state, if you will, that isn't necessarily, you know, it's obviously not on Earth, not an earthly state. But she said, this is a state that you have created in concert or in tandem with the divine presence or with God to give you, we're giving you a place where you can learn what you need to learn in a comfortable environment. So it was, right. It was making me feel comfortable. It was still part of heaven. It was still a part of the heavenly realms. But what I saw was something that was comfortable for me so that I wouldn't freak out. And this seems to be very, it goes across a lot of near-death experiences where people are in a, oftentimes they have their NDE in an environment that looks very comfortable to them. And that's done intentionally. It's to help you assimilate a little bit easier. So to make that shift from physical earthly life to that heavenly spiritual realm is a huge shift. So oftentimes we're given an in-between. So we have time to decompress. If we're going to be sent back, this is the state or place where it's comfortable enough for us so that we can learn what we need to learn, and then we go back. but I knew that there was a point beyond which I could not travel without her help. So I didn't necessarily see it, but I could sense it. And I knew that I couldn't go beyond this barrier without fully dying in my body and having her help me across it. So we just continued, you know, walking through this landscape for what in my mind felt like 2 or 3 months. It was a long time, but I had a lot of stuff to learn. And I think that's why mine was so long, because I had a lot of catching up to do. You know, I had a lot of things that I needed to experience and have shown to me, you know, things such as the nature of love, what gratitude really is, how do we make our lives here on earth happier and more heaven-like? Those were all things that she and my spiritual team and God itself or himself or herself taught me while I was there. It was an incredible experience. And I think the most profound for me was what I came to realize later was my life review, where I was brought to a beautiful pond up in the mountains. And it was a really dark looking pond. The surface was very dark, but there were trees and mountains all around. And she asked me to touch the surface of the water to create a ripple. And I sort of balked at that point. I was like, this was close to the end of my time there. And I balked a little bit, and I said, well, I know what's going to happen. If I touch the surface, there will be ripples formed. And she just said, you know, just do it, please. So I touched the surface, and what I saw on top of that, I just sat back and experienced many, many, many different, I call them little YouTube videos, almost little video snippets of my life, different points of my life, all over the surface of this pond. And in each one of those, I was interacting with someone. So for example, I might be interacting with in one little video, I was interacting with a grocery store clerk who was very tired and harried. She was very stressed. It was right around the holidays. And I was giving her kind of a little pep talk and thanking her for her work during this really busy time. What I didn't know at the time was how positively that affected her. So during my life review here, I was able to not only see that incident, but I got to feel what she felt and experience our interaction from her side of things. So I was able to feel how grateful she felt just for me being nice to her. You know, on the flip side of that, I did see some times where I wasn't very nice to someone, and I got to experience their hurt and disappointment from their perspective. You know, I was experiencing me basically hurting them from their viewpoint. And that's when I realized just how interconnected that we all are. You know, we all are. I mean, spiritually, yes, we're all connected to each other very intimately, but also just from the bare human perspective, what I say and do can have a very profound impact on other people. So I came back from that experience very concerned, and I still am, with how I interact with folks. And so that was, I think, for me, the most profound learning of that whole time. And in my book, I talk about, you know, I think a total of 12 other main points that I learned. But for me, that life review was the most heart-opening, and that's where I came away with the most compassion for other people, just from that experience.
Next, we hear from Jim Bruton. This is from an interview I recorded with him in 2020. Jim's passion, building and flying World War I era aircraft, led him where he never imagined he'd go, a horrific crash that left him for dead. For 1 week, Jim Bruton hovered in that place that is not life and not death, a place he came to know as the in-between.
As they put me to sleep in this world, I woke up in another. There was no tunnel. And in contrast to a lot of near-death experiences, mine was different in some ways. There was no tunnel, no seeing loved ones, no beautiful landscapes, no feeling of unconditional love, no sense of a barrier through which I could not pass or I'd never be able to return. So it's like teleportation, I guess, you know? But anyway, I came to, if you will, over on the other side, which I'll tell you why I call the in-between. And it was like being in a post-apocalyptic city. I mean, imagine London or New York after 100 or 200,000 years of absolutely no one living there. You know, nature's taken back over, or maybe it was after a nuclear war. You know, everything is in ruins. And I was high up on a skyscraper, like on a terrace or something. And I was on my right knee, and I was very aware of feeling incredibly nauseous. I was really sick to my stomach, and I didn't know where I was. I didn't know why I was feeling this way. But I looked around, and the sky was heavy, heavy with clouds, as if it was right on the edge of a storm breaking. But there was no rain. There was also no sound. It's not that I was deaf. It was just simply that quiet. I looked around, and then I looked over to my left, and I saw, as I call it, the only thing of real interest. And it was as if it were a sculpture, I guess. Maybe, if I say four stories high, it's approximately, you know, 50 feet high. And it was an egg-shaped structure, but instead of a shell, like a continuous shell, it was as if it was made out of whether it's metal or stone strips, you know, kind of like lattice work. So you had these strips, and then you had these big openings that you could see through. And I remember looking at it, and then I was hit by another wave of nausea, and I said, I only spoke out loud twice there, and this was the first. I said, I don't think I can stand this. And the second I said that, I realized that this egg was full of gears, and all of these gears started spinning around with a very light clacking sound, like clack, 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 clack. And I just looked at it, and somehow I knew this thing and I are connected. So I, you know, sort of bent over, doubled over with pain, hobbled my way over to it, and I looked through that open latticework at the gears inside. I noticed these gears were a special kind of gear we call a sector gear. And I have to say, I've probably seen one once in my life, because you find them only in clock-like mechanisms. It's a partial arc of a gear, maybe just a quarter section, with the idea that it sweeps back and forth, instead of going all the way around like a usual gear we think of. And what's interesting is that it's obviously a structure that defines a beginning, a middle, and an end, rather than something that is continuous without end. So I looked at them, and then I realized, as I looked really closely, some were more in focus than others. And as I looked at one, it's as if a video feed played in my head of what that gear represented. And I realized, this is an event in my life, in my future. And I looked at a few others and I saw the same thing. And one was like a home renovation project. Another, honestly, was, I do not yet have grandchildren, but another one was seeing two happy grandchildren and my daughter at an amusement park having fun. And I was there. And I reached through, and I don't know why I knew I could do this, but I reached through the lattice and had my hand on the inside of the egg. And I remember touching the gears, and I touched one, and all of a sudden my nausea increased. I mean, almost doubled, and it was already painful. And just out of reflex, I grabbed that gear, pulled it out, wiggled it through the open latticework, and threw it away. As soon as I did that, all the gears inside started spinning around again, and came to realize that this was my future refitting itself around a probability, if you will, that no longer existed. And that makes sense, because you can't show up in 20 years into a conference room and there's just this gaping black hole there. You know, if there was something that was going to happen that day that you'd removed years before, the future, I mean, your life and the universe would have to refit itself around that to provide an alternative. did have a conversation there that you might say was telepathic, you know, because certainly as I looked at this deer, the first thought in my head is, you know, what is this thing? And there was an answer that said, this is the future birthing into the now, that this is the process of becoming. And then I realized, well, I guess that makes sense out of why my future or my life was shaped like this egg, because it was the future birthing into the now, and my destiny was in some ways impregnated by my will. So it made perfect sense that it would be represented as an egg. And that's how deep the internal consistency of the logic goes in my experience. As I've continually studied it and dug in deeper, it's so internally consistent. I'm kind of amazed. And anyway, but you know, it's not like I take credit for creating it. It's just, that's the way it is now. And I'm coming to your question. I just wanted to lead up to it with a couple of other things first. And I remember when I moved, you know, pulled one gear and it respun around, I asked, what's happening now? And literally said, each gear is the probability of a thought, word, or action in your future. Your destiny is resetting itself around what you have removed. And I said, well, how did I know I could do that? Reach in there and remove that gear. And I was literally told, why else are you here? And I said, well, I don't know. I don't even know what this place is. And that's when it said, you are in the in-between. And I said, in between what? And it said, everything. The impossible now between the past and the future. It's impossible in its short duration. Yet here you are, standing inside the eternity of a single moment. And this, do you remember who you are in the world to which your body belongs? And this is when I realized, I had no idea. Like, in other words, in contrast to some other near-death experiences, if someone had come up to me at that point and said, do you want to stay here or do you want to go back? I would have literally said, go back where? I had no memory of my life here, anyone else here. I was that present, I guess you could say. And it said, then you see the truth in how the past is dust. And I said, so why do some of these gears, these futures that I touch, make me sick and not others? I was told all choices have unintended consequences, some unfortunate and some not. The pain each brings is your guide. And I said, well, where are the gears that feel good? And I was told, you're not here to feel good. And it made sense. I was there. It was like being on a mission. I just felt very purpose-driven at that point. It kind of spun around and over again, I kept removing gears. After a while, I look and there's this big pile of gears. And I said, it's starting to look like if I don't have a bad future, then I have no future at all, even though now I feel less pain because I'm removing all of these bad possibilities. I said, am I going to die sooner from all this? And I was told, your destiny has to fit itself around futures that aren't meant to be. Your number of breaths are already counted. I will worry about your last one. And I said, well, I don't know how comforting that it is. And I was told, eliminating bad choices doesn't mean you won't make wrong ones. You won't know they are wrong until after they pass. Since right and wrong are variables you have no control over, the answers to what comes tomorrow are a waste. Better is understanding the beauty of how everything fits and refits together. And I said, so what am I missing here in my lack of understanding? He said, what is clearly before you? No one deserves heaven. It can only be given by grace. It is your birthright, but it must be chosen at the expense of the world that separates us. And that's when I said, well, this fixing my future is painful. I feel ashamed that I'm not using some moral compass, if you will, to guide my decisions on how to improve my future. It's only pain that I have as a guide. And I was told, well, removing your enthusiasm to further chain yourself to the world isn't as painful as the crushing weight of those chains once forged around you. I said, it's as if this place was made so I can do one thing and one thing only with no chance to screw it up. I mean, it's just very directed. And the answer that came back was, if those with choices make poor use of them, then offering fewer possibilities could be called mercy.
In this next part, we hear from Dr. Penny Sartori. Dr. Sartori worked as a nurse in a British hospital for 21 years, 17 of those being in intensive care. She conducted unique and extensive research into the near-death experiences of her patients. In 2005, she was awarded a PhD for her research into NDEs. Her work has received worldwide attention and media coverage. She has spoken at many conferences both nationally and internationally, and her work has received the attention of His Royal Highness King Charles.
During my hospital research, this is a very interesting case because of what happened, really. I'd been looking after this man and we decided to sit him into the chair. He'd been in intensive care for a few weeks at that point. He was making a good recovery. He was still ventilated, and he had a tracheostomy. So we'd sat him in the chair this day, and I can remember as soon as we sat him in the chair, his breathing pattern changed a little bit and his oxygen levels went down. I connected what we call an ambu bag to his tracheostomy, connected it to the oxygen point, and I gave him some extra breath of oxygen. And that resolved his oxygen saturations level. They came back up to normal. But it was a few minutes later and his blood pressure started to drop and his heart rate went into a very fast rhythm, very, very briefly. And he started to get grey and clammy. And all of these were signs that he could go into cardiac arrest. So we literally flung this man back into bed. Within minutes, he was deeply, deeply unconscious. So my colleagues had called the doctor. The doctor came and he was busy at another emergency, but came and reviewed him. We gave him some fluid to bring his blood pressure back up. And then again, his blood pressure started to drop, but that doctor had gone back to the emergency. So my colleagues kept an eye on my patient and I went off to look for another doctor. And as it happened, the consultant walked onto the unit for the first time that day. So he very quickly came and reviewed my patient for me. He shone a pupil torch in his eyes and he prescribed some more fluid, which resolved his blood pressure. And after he'd examined him, the patient then started to flicker his eyelids and he started to move all four limbs. And this is signs of regaining neurological functioning. So the doctor was happy that the man was recovering and he was stable. So he went off to his office. Now, it was about 4 hours later. And this patient was, the ward round was approaching his bed. So there were several doctors there, nurses, there were physiotherapists, the dietitian and the pharmacist. So they were all there. And this man was very excited about something. He couldn't talk because of the tracheostomy, but he was trying to communicate something. And the physiotherapist got him a letter board and he spelled, "I died and I watched it all from above." And so the doctor said, "Oh, you'd better tell Penny about that then. She's very interested in this." And the doctor documented it actually in his notes that he'd revived and reported this experience. And the patient described that he'd left his body and he was looking down from above. And he described everything that the nurse did. And the nurse had cleaned his mouth and because he dribbled out in the side of his mouth, he described the doctor and he correctly identified which doctor had examined him and shone the pupil torch in his eyes. And he hadn't seen that doctor that morning prior to losing consciousness. And he also described the physiotherapist looking very nervous and poking her head around the curtains. And this is exactly what happened. And I know because I was there. I was the nurse who had cleaned his mouth. And he described my actions very accurately. And while all of this was going on, this was when the man was most deeply unconscious and his eyes were closed and he was not responding to deep, painful stimuli. So further to this, he also described looking upwards and going into a pink room where he met his deceased father and his dead mother-in-law, who he'd never met but recognised from photos. And also in the middle of them, there was a man. And he said, "I'm not sure who this man was, but I think it could be Jesus. But it's not what I expect Jesus to look like, because he had long, scruffy hair that needed to be combed." And he said he also had these really bright, piercing eyes as well. And he was very drawn to look at his eyes. And he said when he was in this state, he was so peaceful, so comfortable, all his pain had disappeared, and he wanted to stay there. But the Jesus figure said, no, it's not your time, you have to go back. And he then started to see, it's almost as if he was sucked backwards into his body and the image faded in front of his eyes. And he said he was back in his body, and as soon as he entered into his body, he was in immediate pain. And that pain was so bad that he wished that he'd actually died. Now, another interesting aspect of this case is that when I did a follow-up in-depth interview with this man, he misinterpreted one of my questions. And my question was, when you were out of your body, is there anything that you can do that you can't do normally? Now, I was getting at sometimes if people think of a location, they can instantly find themselves at that location. But he misinterpreted that, and he held up his right hand and he said, oh yeah, look at this, I can open out my hand. I've never been able to do that before. Now, this man has cerebral palsy, and he was 60 years of age at the time of his experience, and his hand had always been in a permanently contracted position, and very much like a claw. And after his experience, he can now open it out fully. And I didn't realise the significance of this until I discussed it with the physiotherapists and the doctors, because they said that physiologically that should not be possible unless he'd had an operation to release the tendons, because his tendons would be in a permanently contracted position. But no such surgery was performed, and I checked his notes. I checked his physiotherapy notes to see if he'd had extensive hand physio, but nothing like that was done. And his sister has actually signed a statement to say that he'd never been able to open out his hand prior to that experience. So he attributes it to the near-death experience. And to me, that is really fascinating. I'm fascinated by it because there are probably millions of people in the world out there with similar ailments. And if we understood the mechanism behind this, how many people would benefit from that without having to have surgery? So, you know, I think we should be really intrigued by these experiences because we can learn so much from them.
Next, we hear from Tricia Barker. Tricia was in a horrific car accident which resulted in her breaking her back in three places. She experienced a profound near-death experience during her spinal surgery.
After the life review, I ended up in this heavenly landscape, and my grandfather was there. I wouldn't have recognized him had he not shown up in this truck that he gave my family. And so the truck was restored to its beautiful, you know, original form, and my grandfather looked like he was in his late 30s or 40s and not how I remembered him. Only when he was in the truck and I saw his jaw did I go, oh, that's my grandfather. And he was the only person who I knew who was on the other side. And I chose my form as I entered this heavenly landscape. And since God had said, be like a little child, I took it literally. And I was like, hey, let's go back to childhood. And so my spirit form became this childlike version of myself. And I was so happy. And I was there with my grandfather and just enjoying the beautiful bright colors and this very peaceful place. It seemed like a holding place to me, something that, you know, you wait and you think about what you want to do next. And in that space, my grandfather communicated telepathically, just like the angels. So there wasn't this conversation going back and forth between us. There was just this look in his eyes and this knowing and this love. And he looked at me at some point. I was on the back of the truck, letting my feet drag through the grass and just enjoying nature. And I did that as a kid. And he looked at me and he said, do you want to continue on? And I saw the light of God up to, you know, up in the sky. And I thought, yes, you know, like I'm an adventurous soul and I love God. And how could I not love God? I want to keep going. And that, so my spirit form, just like it had left the hospital, it just started flying toward that love of God. And as I got closer and closer to God, every part of myself that had been broken or harmed or abused or bullied or made fun of was just healed. I was like, oh, I'm so loved. I'm so cared for. This is amazing. And then even just the small yearnings, like we feel uncomfortable in the body sometimes. And like, what are we doing here? Like, I knew that everything was okay in that moment. That, oh, if I could just express the joy and the peace and the happiness and the comfort, then I would be happy. Like I could totally tell people, you know, that is the best feeling on earth. And it is, you know, better than anything, any passionate love. If you amplify the greatest love of your life, whether that's for kids or, you know, for a romantic experience, whatever it is, if you amplify it millions of times, you're just beginning to feel how good it feels to be in the presence of God. And I wanted to keep going. I felt prayers from family members trying to pull me back to my body. And I just wished them well. I was like, whatever, this is too good. I just want to stay. I don't want to go back there. That's not a place that is interesting. And, you know, as I journeyed closer to God, God stopped me at some point and told me to look down at the earth. And I saw this long river and all these souls. And it was communicated that I had to teach, and not as a spiritual teacher, but as an actual teacher, you know, public school teacher, college professor, that sort of thing, and that I would be in the lives of students. And I was really pissed because I didn't want to be a teacher. So I argued with God. I'd grown up poor and I wanted, you know, a more lucrative career. And God seemed to laugh at me in that moment, like, oh, you know, like, I know you better than you know yourself. And this is what you need to do. And these kids need you. And I saw that without me, in some instances, they might live a life filled with more fear or more pain, and that there was something that I would give to them, whatever it was, that would help them find their mission and find their light and find who it was they were meant to be. And so my life was not about me at that point. It was really about that mission. And a lot of near-death experiencers are maybe even a little envious that I was given a direct mission, because many people have these profound experiences and then come back to their body and they're like, how am I supposed to incorporate this? But from the beginning, I knew, all right, gotta go get a teaching certification. And every time I stepped into a classroom, I was like, gotta let that love of God work through me.
My book, titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is out on Amazon. I've gathered accounts where something happened that could be checked, verified in the real world, details seen and heard when a person was, by all medical standards, gone. I wanted to focus only on those cases where there was evidence, not just stories. The book has had over 50 five-star reviews worldwide, this one from the United States. I have read more than 25 books and watched countless videos, and this book still had new stories. I love the fact that it focused on only verifiable experiences. This is an easy read and great for those needing proof. If you're searching for careful documentation, honest accounts, and stories that may just shift your understanding of life and what may follow, I invite you to read Verified Near-Death Experiences. Verified Near-Death Experiences is available on Amazon, on paperback, audiobook, and on Kindle. In this next clip, we hear from Gary Wimmer. For no apparent reason, Gary suddenly found himself increasingly more aware of and able to see and know future events, plus the thoughts and feelings of others. During a week of vacillating between indescribable euphoria and debilitating fear, he felt the intensity of his perceptions escalating until, as a pedestrian, he was hit head-on by a speeding car.
I was involved in a head-on collision with a speeding car, and I felt no pain upon impact. None. Zero. In fact, right before the speeding car accident, I saw these monitors, guardian angels, that I had felt for about a week. I felt them around me. I couldn't put my finger up. They didn't reveal themselves. Was aware of what I was going through. Something was monitoring me. And they seemed to name themselves the monitors, like guardian angels. Well, so right as I'm walking down Guadalupe Street and panicking, I saw this white light ahead of me, above me, and all my fear immediately disappeared. Never felt so good in my life. Instantaneously, I looked up and saw these seven kind of off-white robed individuals. They didn't look male or female, but they felt a little more male because they felt authoritative. And they asked me in one voice, kind of a low voice, like a guy who does voice work for movies or something, low sort of voice. And they said, "Do you trust us?" And I said, "Absolutely, yes. You're the monitors. I've felt you all around me. I don't understand." I started to ask them a bunch of questions and talking, and they kind of cooled me down and say, "You'll understand everything. Don't worry. Do you trust us?" And I said, "Yes." And within a couple of seconds, the accident with the speeding car. And then as soon as I was hit by the car, I was outside my body looking back at my body being tumbled into the car and bashed and hitting the grill in the front end. But I felt no attachment to it. And I felt like, oh, that's what happens on Earth. Even though I had some sort of feeling that it was me, but a detached feeling. Maybe that's what's happened. I started expanding. And I started expanding outward in all directions like a balloon. The most incredible experience I can get. Of course, my body's still on the street and people screaming and the cars stopped and the drivers panicked. And I could see all that as I'm speeding away from the city. But pretty quickly, I just became bigger than the Earth. And I saw the whole Earth from 360 degrees, North and South Pole, China, USA, all at once. And I saw it all at once in 360 degrees because it felt like it was going inside me as I was expanding. And I started expanding beyond the planets and then beyond this solar system, and things started moving so fast. And I started seeing connections to other souls I'd had. They looked like blinking red lights on this thing that I had called the web. Well, I was going through this first week, I felt this web. It's an interconnectedness of all soul, human consciousness, and how we're interrelated and how we affect each other. So I all of a sudden could see this web and saw connections to myself and people I'd known and musicians and lovers. They knew other people. All of a sudden, this became a huge, infinite connection of souls that I could see like red lights, like on a radio tower. So as I expanded beyond this solar system, I was going after one sensation, getting one sensation after another, and feeling beyond time. I couldn't tell if things were sequential or all simultaneous, because there's no time to differentiate. It was a strange feeling. So I go, wow, all of a sudden this is all happening at once or sequential, but It was sequential enough for me to kind of grasp and go to the next level. The next level of what? The next level of experiencing this infinite creation that I started expanding through. And I galaxies and galaxies and galaxies and got bigger. And by this time, I'd almost completely forgotten about myself, who I was, my body sitting down in Austin, Texas. It was just pure sensation. And the most incredible and beautiful sensation one could ever have. I was not afraid at all. You cannot be afraid when you're on that train to infinite consciousness. Even though I didn't know that's where I was headed, I knew something was going on. But as I expanded beyond this universe, it felt like all of a sudden, like some sort of abstract idea, like a concept, a thought, not really a bunch of matter. It just appears as matter because that's this consciousness, this thought makes it appear that way. And then I noticed that this universe is just one of billions of universes, infinite maybe. And all these infinite universes look like star-studded sky, almost solid white. And in fact, it kind of was solid white, just with universes everywhere. And then all this huge panorama of universes rolled into like a long tunnel. And boy, all of a sudden, I'm going through this tunnel of light. And that's a pretty ample description. It really does feel like a tunnel of light. People are, it had these kind of purple, silver, clouds rotating around me clockwise, I noticed, as I was going through. Why clockwise? I don't know. Why yellow? Why silver and white? I don't know. Why tunnel of light? I don't know. And I was speeding through this tunnel of light. By this time, I completely forgot about me and was just elated at all the beauty and sensation that I was feeling. And then I got shot out of a cannon. I felt like I was ejected from this tunnel of light and into this beautiful, infinite void of blue. It looked sky blue everywhere. And it was infinite mind and infinite creativity. And all of a sudden, I was at one with it. And I realized that everything that's created, everything of matter and thought, is all really a reflection of this one infinite mind vibrating infinitely and creating infinite universes and infinite possibilities. And the sheer infiniteness of it is incomprehensible with the human mind. Of course, I didn't have a human mind then. I only had my consciousness. And it could and did absorb it. And it felt like I was learning stuff and seeing stuff about how creation came into play and why and how we reincarnated and how we chose things. And it was so much information so fast that I got enough highlight to put the rest together when I came back. So I'm in this infinite mind, infinite space, completely unaware of myself. And I did not feel like I was observing this infinite consciousness. I was it. I was with it, part of it, all of it, somehow not detached, until all of a sudden, I felt like I was witnessing it. And boy, did that shift the panorama. Why I felt that, I don't know. What would have happened if I didn't feel that? Would I have stayed there? I don't know. But I did feel this sense of observation rather than being at one with it. And I was all of a sudden just pulled away. And I used this term called spiritual gravity that I felt both pulling me out there and then pulling me back to somewhere. I didn't know where I was going, but I left this infinite mind, infinite light, and was pulled back into this universe of all the infinite universes. This tunnel of light projected me to this particular one. And I entered this universe and went, wow, I feel like I've got some relationship to this place, but where? Who am I? I was a little apprehensive, because I knew where I'd just been, and it was beautiful and powering. Where am I headed? I don't know, but it's certainly not going to be quite where I was. So as I collapsed back inward, I found myself closer and closer to a particular solar system, and it happened to be this one. And this is all almost instantaneous. And I came to this solar system and felt like I had a particular connection with it toward this Earth, still not knowing what the connection was. And then I started seeing these pictures of what's going on the Earth right now. I was these pictures of the future of our planet. And I saw approximately 100 years ahead in time. And it was all systems on the planet breaking down, people screaming, arguing, revolution. And it's kind of what we're seeing now. Oh, this, I saw the financial crisis of 2008. I saw 9/11, but didn't know what it was. I saw the plane going through the tower. So I saw all these pictures of future world. And this was 1977, as I'm coming back into my body, not even knowing for sure who I am yet or what body I might be coming back to. All these flashcards. And then they start showing the other side of this process, whereas the result of the revolution, higher consciousness, it's showing us all the quotes so we can fix them. It's showing us all the problems in our societies and our cultures and our own way of looking at things so we can fix it. We're now seeing all the holes in the boat become apparent so we can fix them. And we will fix them in time. It will take a generation or two, but we will have this peace on Earth. Completely radically different from where it is now. It'll probably be, 50, 100, 150 years. There's not a particular date.
Next, we hear from David Ditchfield. David had a freak accident and was pulled under the wheels of a speeding train. In the hospital afterwards, he had an amazing near-death experience.
And it was just before that point of going in surgery that I left my body. And I went from all the, you know, the high tense sort of atmosphere and the noise of the doctors and the pain and the agony to this beautiful, warm sort of dark place. And it was just, it felt like a darkened room. And I suddenly realized, I'd looked around, I could see these pulsating colors, like they were like orbs that were just slowly pulsating and flashing all around me, like yellows and greens and oranges. And so that felt very calming to me. And I looked to see what I was lying on. I realized I wasn't actually lying on the hospital trolley anymore, but I was actually lying on what was like a big, huge piece of slate rock. As I lay on this rock, I just kind of like remember just looking at the sheer size of it. It was like a sort of a best way to describe it. It's almost like a medieval altar, you know. I looked down at my body to check to see how that was looking, and everything was fixed. There was no cuts or bruises or severed arms. Everything was back intact, and I was just covered in this blue sort of satin sort of silk sheet, if you like, that was covering my body. It felt very calming to have this cover over me. And then I felt the presence of somebody or something near me. And I looked up, and just at the right of my feet, I saw this beautiful being, androgynous being, neither male or female, and just with this kind of white blonde hair and this kind of skin that was just kind of luminous and radiating light and from within. And it was like this kind of knowing expression on the face of this being. And I felt like I'd known this being for a long time. You know, it was just watching over me caringly and almost like guarding me. I just felt an awful lot of love coming from the being. I laid my head back, and as I did, I remember also above me were three grids of white light that were shining down into my eyes. I couldn't take my gaze away from those grids. So there were really powerful light that was coming from them, and it was like a healing energy. It was so powerful that normally you wouldn't be able to look in with the human eye. You know, if it was electric or sunlight, you just couldn't do it. But with this light, you could, and I just couldn't take my gaze away. I just laid there, and then I suddenly felt that there was the presence of two other beings with me either side, and there was a female form, and like one was like white Caucasian with brown hair, just wearing a simple brown dress, and then the other one was more sort of Asian Indian, American Indian in appearance, and they just had their hands slowly hovering over my body and healing me, and you know, just kind of helping me. It's not so much healing my body, but it felt like they were healing my soul. And this experience was just really powerful, and the energy that was coming through from their hands was just extraordinary. It was almost like an expression of, it felt like love that was just coming from those hands, and that love was just kind of like going through right throughout me. And it was almost like every molecule on my body was vibrating from this feeling of love. And I knew I was being healed, and I knew that it was my soul that was being healed. And I felt like it was, you know, like it was being bathed or prepared for something. It was just a wonderful thing. And at that point, we didn't actually talk. A lot of it was telepathy, really, that was going on there, you know, the communication. And it's really hard to explain that it's a completely different dimension, and it's as real as, say, that I am sat here now sort of looking at my microphone and talking to you. It's as three-dimensional and as that, but it's a different thing, that it's like there was no need for conversation. You know, I could feel that they were communicating to me what was going on and who they were, and I knew ultimately that the first person that I saw was the soulmate, if you like, my higher consciousness, if you like. It was a part of me, that being, because as I say, it felt like I'd known this person for longer than my whole lifespan and beyond. there was a connection there, and it was very, very powerful. At that point, I also realized, because up until that point, and I carried a lot of guilt in my life, you know, everyone used to joke that guilt was my middle name, you know, it was just, and all that had dispersed, all those feelings of insecurities and shame and guilt had all gone. And this love that was coming through was teaching me that I was loved and that I was okay. And that I was a good person, as I felt at that point. As I thought about my family, I thought, well, they're going to be, because I clearly thought at this stage that I died, that this was it, that I'd gone over to the next level and that was it, I'd died from the accident. So I figured my family were just going to be, they were already really distraught about what had happened down in the hospital. My mother was in tears, A&E department. So I looked over the edge to see whether I could see my family over the edge of this big rock. I couldn't see them at all. But what I did see was this beautiful waterfall of stars that were like cascading down into other galaxies and down into infinity. It was just like it was an enormous sight, you know, and very powerful and very beautiful. These stars were just constantly just falling over an edge, and then shooting stars were just dropping through in the middle. And I was just going, wow, yeah, this is like amazing. This is just really beautiful. And then, of course, I realized at that stage that I wasn't actually in a darkened room, in a small darkened space, that I was actually in the universe itself and that I was a part of it. And so that was a very powerful moment. So I lifted my head back over, and interestingly enough, rather than feeling that guilt and shame that I couldn't see my family, I just remember saying to myself, oh, that's okay, you know, they'll be fine. I'll be seeing them soon anyhow. You know, they'll be coming up to this wonderful place themselves. You know, it was lovely. I just thought that's okay and went with it. Then as I turned over, something really amazing happened then. It was the energy I could feel that was coming off the three beings, which was already powerful enough, suddenly had turned up tenfold. I could feel this amazing power, and I looked, and there was this huge white tunnel of white light that was kind of closing in on me, and this tunnel of white light was like surrounded by all these beautiful flames that were just slowly circling round. It was a really powerful moment. This energy, the closer it got, the more I could sense this energy that was just, again, was just vibrating through my body. And I instantly knew what, again, through telepathy, that this was actually the source of all creation that I was looking at. This was God, you know, this was the great maker, and not the image that we're all used to seeing, the image of Michelangelo's Vatican ceiling God. You know, this is a big, huge tunnel of white light. I remember I just put my head back, and I remember I was just smiling with joy at that point. And just as I did that, I suddenly came crashing back down to earth, and I was back in my body, into the hospital with all the people rushing around and the lights, and then my body, you know, in pain. Then the consultant coming up to me and saying, right, we're going to take you into surgery now and stuff. And I went, okay.
And that was a selection of clips from interviews I did with people who have had a near-death experience. A great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon, where you'll get access to the extended version of this episode. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions, and you can now sign up for a 7-day free trial. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife. You'll click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.